May it please the Court. We are here today, Your Honors, to talk about the meaning of one word. That word is furnish. What does it mean to furnish a worker, and who is the party that must do the furnishing? Now, these questions are crucial in this case, as the sole issue that appellant is asking Your Honors to decide is whether Len Mendenhall, the deceased husband of appellant, was an employee or a temporary worker under the policy of insurance at issue at the time of his death. Now, tomorrow is ironically actually the fifth anniversary of Len Mendenhall's death. He passed on March 8, 2007, while working on Jay Walker's farm. He was dumping rock when the tractor trailer that was dumping the rock overturned and crushed him underneath. If Len was Mr. Walker's employee, as that term is defined under the policy, then coverage will not be provided because of the employee exclusion, which excludes coverage for employees of the insured. However, there is an exception to the exclusion, and that exception is the temporary worker exception. Now, if Len was a temporary worker, coverage will be provided because he was not an employee.
Could I go back and just make sure I understand the facts? Who purchased the policy?
The policy was owned by the Family Center of Farmington, which was a retail store owned by Jay Walker.
But it was incorporated, is that right?
That's correct.
So it's a corporation?
That's right. And the Family Center of Farmington actually owned the automobile, the tractor trailer that tipped over.
And so they have both the truck and the insurance policy.
That's correct.
And Jay Walker is treated as an insured because he was using the vehicle with permission?
That's right. He was a permissive user under the policy, and that was determined. That was an issue actually before the trial court, Judge McShane, and that was determined and resolved fully there. He was a permissive user.
And so Mr. Mendenhall wasn't considered a permissive user?
No,
user?
He was a worker for Jay Walker, who was the user of the vehicle.
Because Mr. Mendenhall was actually using the vehicle at the time with permission.
He was dumping rock with pursuant to Mr. Walker's direction at the time of his death.
If he's not covered under this, if we were to find he was not a temporary worker, then he's covered under work comp, is that correct?
No, Your Honor. Actually, he's excluded from workers' comp because he was a farm laborer. So workers' comp does not apply at all to this case. Okay. So this policy is the sole basis for his recovery. So under the policy, a temporary worker is actually a defined term, and it is defined as a person who is furnished to you to meet seasonal or short-term workload conditions. Now, there's no dispute in this case that Mr. Mendenhall worked on a seasonal or a short-term basis. Parties fully agree to that. So the sole issue is the furnishing of Mr. Mendenhall. And appellant would set forth to this court that there was absolutely a furnishing that occurred in this case under the definition under Missouri law as set forth by this court in the Gavin case, which was a 2008 case decided by this court that considered policy definitions identical to those in play in this policy. And in Gavin, this court determined or held that a temporary worker means necessarily implies that a third party has been involved in providing or supplying the worker to the insured. So appellant has always taken the position that this case and the set of facts under this case is consistent with Gavin. As a third party, the Family Center was involved in providing or supplying Len, Mr. Mendenhall, to Mr. Walker, the farm owner.
And I know you focus on whether, what kind of third party, and does it have to be an employment agency, or it can be any kind of third party, but opposing counsel says they're not really arguing that. They're arguing with the word furnished, which is the word that is in the, is required and is in the statute. And that what happened here was there was a referral. And referring someone is different than furnishing them.
Yeah, that is, I think, part of the argument that respondent makes. And it's sort of interesting that before the trial court, before the Court of Appeals, we were always focused on the ambiguity and who is the identity
but,
of the furnisher.
But, you know, as respondent, they don't actually have to file anything, so because it's your burden. So I mean, if that is an issue, furnishing, it's not, they don't have any duty to preserve things as respondent. It's just as appellant that you have that duty. So they can raise new arguments as respondent here.
Absolutely, and they do raise the new argument of control. But just maybe I'm misunderstanding you, Your Honor, and I apologize. I do think it is their burden to, because this is an exception or exclusion, so it is their burden to prove the exclusion is applicable here. But however, they have raised this issue of control. And so I would submit to you that there are two ambiguities in the word furnish. The first ambiguity is the identity ambiguity. Who is the third party? And the second ambiguity is, what does it mean to furnish? What is that act of furnishing? So that I would call that the action ambiguity. So this is the first time that we've been really briefing and addressing that. However, when we look at the identity ambiguity, that is really what all of the courts across the country have really considered when trying to define this term furnish. And the action ambiguity, or the act of furnishing, has really only been addressed, and the control requirement that respondent sets forth has really only been addressed by one case. That's the Empire case. Mm-hmm. And that case is actually an outlier. If you look at all of the law across the country, Empire is the only case that focuses on the act of furnishing and whether or not control is required.
But if it's the only case, it can't be an outlier. I mean, we do maybe... maybe there wasn't a question that they did furnish in those cases, and it was a question.
Right,
but we have that here because they specifically have raised the argument repeatedly that all they did was refer somebody, and lots of people get references or recommendations, and that's not a furnishing. What's your response to that?
My response to that is this: I have more than a referral in this case. There's more than a referral because the facts are as follows. Mr. Mendenhall submitted an application for employment with the Family Center. He was then interviewed by Mr. Fraley, Gary Fraley, who was a manager of the Family Center, and interviewed Mr. Mendenhall for that position. Now, Mr. Fraley therefore vetted Mr. Mendenhall. He examined his particular qualifications, determined whether or not he would be interested for a position, and then supplied Mr. Mendenhall to Mr. Walker. So in this case, there was an interview, there was a vetting, and then a subsequent recommendation. So
who did the hiring?
The hiring was actually done by Mr. Walker. He hired Mr. Mendenhall for the farm.
So tell me what's involved. My concern is this: I'm thinking about, you know, I interview a law clerk, and I think they're great, but gosh, I've already hired someone. So I call up one of my colleagues and I say, hey, you should interview this person, or you should hire them. I think they're really good. Have I furnished someone, and am I at risk for liability if a former employer, you know, sends a recommendation to a later employer and they say this person is great? Are they at risk for liability? Are they legally held to have furnished them? Because there'll be a lot less reference letters.
Sure, and I understand that concern. However, I think that that's not likened to the situation at hand, Your Honor, because in that case, if you interviewed someone and then made a simple recommendation or gratuitous recommendation, that person who you recommended the law clerk to would likely interview them themselves.
And if they don't, though? I mean, it all depends on what the other person does, if they take an independent interest and do further research versus depending on you.
I think that what we really need to be focused on here is whether or not there's an ambiguity in this term, furnish. And because in this situation, furnishing, we have cases that have said a referral is synonymous with a furnishing, but I don't think we have to go that far in this case.
Is the difference here because, unlike Judge Stiff's a hypothetical or scenario, the difference here is because the Family Center and the farm have a common owner?
I think that is absolutely part of it. And like I said, it's not like a gratuitous referral, such as I refer one of my clients to another lawyer. I do that gratuitously. In this case, there was the interviewer was part, he was a manager of the Family Center, and as you correctly point out, the farm owner then used the Family Center as a sort of clearinghouse, if you will, to attract candidates. That Mr. Mendenhall would never have known about the job at the farm but for the Family Center's attracting of him as a potential candidate, interviewing him, vetting his qualifications, and then endorsing him.
But as Citizens United would say, corporations are people too. But they're separate people. So it's that's why the corporate system is there. But they're people too.
Well, I absolutely. But this is clearly, the record is very, very clear that we have a farm, which is a sole proprietorship owned by Jay Walker and his wife. And then we have the Family Center, which was a corporation, two totally separate and distinct. And Mr. Mendenhall was always paid from the farm. He received W-2s from the farm, payroll from the farm. He was never paid by the Family Center.
Was Mr. Walker the controlling shareholder in the Family Center?
Absolutely, 100% controlling shareholder, Your Honor.
Is there any case law that supports my proposition that there needs to be a common owner in this furnishing type of situation?
Not to my knowledge. I have not. The case is really, what the case is really focused on that we've given you, it really, when it looks to it, is the identity of the furnisher. Does it have to be an employment agency, or can any third party furnish a worker? If you look at the cases, that's really what this comes down to. The cases really don't focus on this idea of a referral versus a furnishing. So not to my knowledge, Your Honor. But I think that we should consider the fact that
on the waterfront where there'd be these people who'd be sending out these folks for longshoremen jobs, temporary jobs, they're furnishing, like Terry Dalton on the waterfront, and that's a temporary job. And the same thing with farm workers. Farm workers would come and they'd go to the center and they'd say, we need you five people to come to our farm.
I think that's right. I think that if I understand you, a temporary worker, as we know from the policy, is a person who is furnished to you to meet seasonal or short-term workload conditions. And in the traditional sense, that would mean from an employment agency, would be the furnished worker. However, that is not what the policy says. And if we look at the definition of a leased worker in the policy, a leased worker is provided by a specific type of third party. And in this case, a temporary worker is not provided by a specific type of third party. The third party only comes from the implication of the word furnish. So, I believe I'm almost out of time, but I would urge the court to look at the plain language of the policy, and that's what we're called to do in this case. And we're not called to think about what they should have said or what they intended to say. What we're called to do is look at the plain and ordinary meaning of the term furnish. We know what that means from Gavin. We're not trying to depart from Gavin here. We are consistent with Gavin that a worker is furnished by if he comes by any third party and that there is some involvement by that third party. Some involvement is what Gavin said. Does not say control.
Thank you very much. Any more questions? Thank you.
May it please the court?
It does. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. In terms of the procedural background of the case of the parties, there's one thing I would like to add to or clear up. This resulted from a judgment under 537.065 in the underlying case. There was another insurance company involved. Jay Walker had a separate farm policy for the operation of the farm. It was with Farm Mutual Casualty Company. And as part of the underlying proceedings, it was agreed that they would not look to the coverage under the farm mutual policy, which did have a provision for injury to farm employees.
And it was, they received, Mrs. Mendenhall received a payment of $50,000 under that policy.
And they paid, that was paid on behalf of the Family Center, who was also a defendant, not on behalf of Jay Walker. But there was another policy also involved, but they're not subject to execution because of the 537.065 agreement. Counsel is correct. We are talking about the definition of furnished, but I think it's important we understand the full factual context of what was involved. Appellant contends that simply because there was an interview with the Family Center by an individual named Gary Fraley, not Jay Walker, he was not hired, and it's undisputed that he never had a relationship with the Family Center. He was never employed by the Family Center. He was never paid by the Family Center.
Opposing counsel is saying this is different in that basically they used the Family Center as kind of an interviewer and a more than a normal referral. They kind of performed, whether if they didn't formally have that function, here they performed that function of in a, almost making the decision.
Well, Your Honor, there's no basis in the record for that.
What is in the record on that?
What is in the record is very simply that he interviewed with the Family Center. The Family Center decided not to hire him. Gary Fraley, who was the individual that talked to him, then told Jay Walker, according to his affidavit, this individual would be good for the position, simply good for the position. And according to the stipulated facts, a few days later, Jay Walker then talked to Mr. Mendel and hired him. But he hired him, and it's stipulated, in his capacity as the owner of the farm, not in any capacity for the family.
But he was driving the truck owned by, was that true? He was driving the truck owned by the Family Center?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that truck was covered under the policy at issue.
And the Family Center policy paid.
Was this true? The
Family Center policy paid $50,000, the difference?
On behalf of the Family Center.
Yeah, right.
But this is a Family Center policy.
That's okay. Correct, Your Honor. The Family Center is a named insured. And the argument was Mr. Walker is an additional insurer because he's using it with permission.
Was Mr. Fraley an agent of Mr. Walker's?
Not from the farm standpoint. Mr. Fraley was solely an employee of the Family Center, which is a totally separate corporation. Then Mr. Fraley then said he'd be good for the position. There was a totally separate hiring situation by Jay Walker as the owner of the farm. That was stipulated, too.
Do we know what he did to hire him? Did he just call him and say you're hired, or did he do any kind of...
What the record says is that a few days after he interviewed with the Family Center, that he then hired Jay, hired
we
Mr.
We don't have any more details.
Pardon?
We don't have any further details.
No further detail in the affidavit.
Do we have details? Was he then continuously hired, but as a temporary employee until the time of the accident, or was he hired off and on from that point until the time of the accident?
It's my understanding that he was hired, and then he would be called as a need arose to haul rock or to do work for the farm.
How long was the after the hiring was the accident, more or less?
Several months, I think. Yeah, it was a several month period. Actually, he had
the reason I ask is because in Gavin, one thing the court said was, even if a union could be considered to have furnished an employee, they furnished them the first time, but then this time when the union member got hired, they just noticed the opening sign and went and said, "Hey, remember me? I want to get hired again," and they hired him. So even though the initial referral was by the union, this particular one was not, and I didn't know if that had any application to dispatch.
There was some period of time that he worked during the year, the prior year, and was paid as needed. Then I think he was called for this one job in the year of the accident. But the fact of the matter is there was no relationship ever established between Jay Walker and the Family Center. He was never an employee and was never paid by the Family Center. It's our position, Your Honor, that...
Is he a stockholder of the Family Center?
Jay Walker was, I think, the sole shareholder of the Family Center.
And how is that relevant? Does that make a difference here because of the close relationship that
I don't think it makes any difference. I think the whole issue is the Family Center, as a totally separate entity, did they...
What did the Family Center do? Was their purpose, were they interviewing for other farmers, or were they screening people for jobs on farms?
That's not clear from the record. They interviewed Jay Walker... I'm sorry, Mr. Len Mendenhall, in this case, for a truck driver's job and
so
decided not to hire.
They were interviewing for their own purposes initially, or for others?
Family Center wanted to hire him for their own purposes and decided not to.
But as a farm center, they didn't have any employment role. It was just for their own purposes.
That's my understanding. That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Did they make a practice of referring people to farms in the area who they didn't hire?
That's not in the record at all, Your Honor. Our position is very simply the term furnished under these circumstances. The term furnished in the Webster's dictionary is the definition is to provide or supply with what is needed or desirable. Black's Law Dictionary also uses those terms to supply, provide, or equip to accomplish a particular purpose, and that's cited in the Nautilus Insurance versus Gardner.
Or any of the other, they give all kinds of definitions in Webster's and anyone talk about referrals?
No,
furnished the same as
referral. No, referrals is a separate term. Provide or supply is the underlying common words that are used in all these definitions. It's our position, Your Honor, that implicit in providing or supplying is a necessity for a relationship. You can't provide or supply something you don't have a relationship with. And that under the facts and circumstances of this case, this is nothing more than a referral, and that doesn't rise to the level of a relationship. The employment situation which we're dealing with, a relationship also involves some degree of control. The cases which we cite and rely upon that hold that the furnisher or the temporary employee requirement is met in addressing the term furnishing.
Was Mr. Walker a principal stockholder of the Family Center?
Mr. Walker was a sole shareholder of the Family Center.
Sole shareholder?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So even though they're separate persons, it still could be relationships.
Your Honor,
if he's a sole shareholder, I guess they might know each other. He might know, they might know who he is, and he knows who they are.
Well, knows the corporation, but there's no indication that he knew Mr. Mendenhall before the interview.
Right, but that's not necessary.
If you ignore the corporate forms, then there's no referral at all because they're all the same party.
Well, I mean, you could certainly look at it that way. I think what you have to look at it is, in the context of this is, you have a separate corporation and a separate entity. What is the relationship of the separate entity with the person furnished or the employee? There is none.
Was there any evidence in the record of that we'd look to in piercing the corporate veil type analysis? Any allegations that they didn't maintain their proper corporate status, that they were undercapitalized, that they were uninsured?
None, Your Honor. And because of this implicit control, the cases then always use the example of a third party being an employment service or employment agency, because it does have that relationship and some degree or element of control.
Are there any cases that say you can be a third party for purposes of furnishing that is not an employment agency?
There are cases. I think there are three cases cited by the appellants in their brief. But we take the position, Your Honor, that the reasoning doesn't fit with the reasoned approach to this and the common definition of the term furnished.
Well, did the Family Center own all the equipment? I mean, they own this truck that Mr. Mendenhall drove. Do they own the tractors? Did they own other aspects of Mr. Walker's farm?
No. The Family Center owned the truck, and the truck was used by the Family Center for Family Services operations. Mr. Walker would, on occasion, use this Family Center truck to haul rock or do other.
Did he rent it? Did he lease it? What did he do with the truck?
I think he just. There's no evidence in the record that he made any payment for it. He used it with the Family Center's permission, as a permission.
Which he owned.
Which he owned the stock in, Your Honor. Right. I think that's an important distinction. It is a separate corporate entity. The case law that we cite do involve situations where there was a referral, and
I wanted to ask, what if you had is it your position it can only be an employment agency? What if you had a situation, so a statutory employer kind of situation, where someone, maybe you were delivering something from, you work for a tractor-trailer business, and you were delivering something to a farm, and you supplied your employee to go work for them temporarily because you're installing some things or, you know, whatever it may be, wouldn't you be furnishing your employee to them who's working for them, and yet you're not an employment agency?
It's not our position that it absolutely has to be an employment agency.
That's what I was trying to find out.
Yeah, you could conceive of a situation, I think. The case that Empire Mutual versus Jones that we cite, that did involve a situation where you had an employer for the worker who knew the insured who also employed him and said, look, you can have him work for you in the morning. We'll continue to have him work for us in the afternoon. And so the employee agreed to go to work and got hurt while he was working in the morning for the trash, for that trash compacting firm. The court in that case said even that employment relationship wasn't enough to constitute furnishing because the employee had the choice to accept the job or not. Conceivably, you could think of a situation where, okay, the employer would say, you need to work for my friend in the afternoon, and he will pay you, et cetera. So that may go over the line. So conceivably, I think there may be circumstances where that could happen. But the key thing is, in this case, you don't have those circumstances. You don't have any relationship created whatsoever. You can't provide or supply something. In the Dorping House case, which we cite, the argument was made that these two individuals who were referred by the son of the insured were furnished by the son. And the court, in deciding in favor of the exclusion, said it's difficult to conceive of a situation where if you don't employ someone, you could furnish them to someone else. And that saying...
Excuse me. Go ahead, if you're finishing what the court said.
Yeah, I think I finished. Yeah, that was my point.
Your opponent relies on the definition of a leased worker as guiding us in interpreting it, and under the rules of construction, that they specifically refer to an employment agency circumstance in leased worker and don't in temporary worker. Isn't that a solid distinction under the rules of construction?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because leased worker, particularly in the terms of workers' compensation, has a particular definition and specificity. Leased work under a leased worker situation in many jurisdictions, I think even in Missouri, that the leased worker, the party, the leasing party, the lessee, is required to provide workers' compensation insurance. Whereas in a temporary agency, then typically the employee remains employee of the temporary agency who provides the workers' comp and benefits.
But you could make the distinction and indicate that they were both from an employment agency, saying one was paid and one was not between a lease one, couldn't you?
Well, I think the key is furnished. Still the term furnished. In other words, there has to be a relationship to furnish, whether it's a relationship as an employment agency or a leased agency. I mean, a leasing agency is a specific type of employment service, whereas a temporary worker agency, for example, in the cases that counsel cites involving the Missouri unemployment statute in their reply brief, the temporary agency is defined as, actually it's a temporary help firm, as a firm that hires the employee and assigns them. So again, that is in it by its very definition in the statute establishes a relationship.
Do we have to accept your view that the fact that the leasing definition of a leasing says that it has to be from a third party, from an employment agency, and the definition of temporary worker does not? If we were to disagree with you and find that made a difference and that suggests that the people who furnish a temporary worker do not necessarily need to be an employment agency, do you lose, or does your alternative argument still apply about the meaning of firm?
Our alternate argument still applies, because the fundamental fact is, whether it's an employment agency or not, there has to be some relationship. Under the facts of this case, there was no relationship. This is nothing more than a mere referral. And it's our position that a referral does not meet the definition of furnished to. As noted in the Dorpinghaus decision, not every contract that has more than one meaning is ambiguous. The sense of the word depends on how it's being used. It's the context that's being used. The context of this case is there was no relationship ever established. Therefore, you can't furnish, and we would request that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thanks very much, Your Honor.
Judge Bogle, wait a second. Judge Bogle, do you have any questions that you'd like to?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Was there any relationship in the three cases that you rely on? What was the relationship, if any, in Nix Brick, the National Indemnity?
Yes. In Nix Brick Oven, we had a situation where there was an owner of a pizza parlor, and he asked his friend if he knew of anyone who would want to work there during their busy season. And the friend said, yeah, I'll recommend someone that I know. And likewise, in the landscape management case, a supervisor of a landscape company asked some of his permanent employees to help him find seasonal labor, and then one employee said, my brother-in-law will help you.
And however, how about the bituminous case? Was there a relationship at all in that case?
Was that the Mike Ross case, uh-huh. Your Honor? In Mike Ross, there was likewise more of a referral situation. And I would say that in my case, the facts are even stronger than they were in those cases, because this is not a case of a simple referral. This is a case of a farmer not having the ability to attract potential employees on his own. He doesn't have any notoriety or any reason for people to submit applications to him, but he has a business. He has a business that's well known in the community, and he's using that business to attract workers. And this is very different than the situation in Gavin, because in Gavin, what we had was a union worker who, I think the testimony was, he pulled off the highway because he saw some work going on at a job site. That's absolutely not what happened here, because Mr. Mendenhall could not have known about the position at the farm, but for his submitting his application, the vetting that occurred, and then the endorsement by Mr. Fraley in submitting him to Walker.
Do they do that regularly? Does the Family Center do that regularly for Mr. Walker?
There's absolutely nothing in the record regarding whether or not this happened in other situations. We just simply don't know, Your Honor. However, I wanted to go back to ambiguity, because ambiguity is really what we need to be focused on here.
But wait, one moment you said it's plain reading, the next moment you say it's ambiguity.
My understanding of the black letter law of the state is that if there is any ambiguity, that we have to look at the ordinary meaning of the term as it would be used by the average purchaser of the policy, and not impart some technical meaning upon the word furnish. And I also wanted to address one thing that I'm not sure if it was
clear. The ambiguity is to be read against the insurance company.
The ambiguity must be construed in favor of coverage. That's right. There was some question, I think, about whether or not that the Family Center interviewed Lynn for its own purpose. And there's absolutely nothing in the record on that point. We know that Lynn submitted an application for the Family Center, but we don't know whether or not Mr. Fraley was asked, hey, see if you can find someone for my farm, or if he was asked, see if you can find someone for the Family Center.
If we were to ignore the corporate form, that Pierce the Corporate Veil or whatever, that would mean there was no third-party referral at all. So that
Absolutely. Okay. I don't think we need to ignore the corporate form.
You're not saying the fact that that Mr. Walker is 100% owner means we should ignore the
absolutely
separation.
Not. I'm actually saying the opposite, because okay. There has to be a third party here, and the third
right.
party is that entity, the Family Center. And the cases that are cited regarding this control issue, or the case, Empire, it simply cannot be the rule, because if control were required, a temporary employment agency couldn't furnish a worker, and that cannot be the result, because a temporary employment agency does not mandate that its workers go to accept or reject a position of employment.
Well, they have a person and they say, go over to this secretarial agency or go over to this architecture firm or whatever. They control the decision whether they're going to go there or not. I mean, you can not work, but it's very different than my telling a friend, hey, go apply here.
Well, in the temporary employment agency situation, that the worker has the discretion to either accept or reject the position. And so if that were the case, that was the test, then we could never have a temporary employment agency furnishing. We couldn't have recruiters or headhunters furnishing, because recruiters and headhunters certainly don't mandate that the worker accept a position that's offered. So control simply cannot be the test, because it's not in accordance with logic.
Where do you get your authority for reference and furnish being the same?
There are a lot of cases where a referral is equated to a furnishing. And I'm not asking the court to do that, but there are cases. There's the Para case, there's the Reiner case. And actually, Chief Justice Tidelman, in your dissent in Gavin, I think that I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth.
But oh, you can.
I believe that you actually interpreted the majority's opinion as there was no furnishing, because there simply wasn't a referral that occurred. And if that would be persuasive, I'd also mention that.
It's very persuasive. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Any more questions?
But again, I just quickly. Oh, am I out of time?
Okay, quickly.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not asking this court to find a referral synonymous with the furnishing. We definitely have more because of the vetting that occurred in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.